Is it better to remain blissfully ignorant of a tragedy, or to know all the details, even when you can do nothing about it? That question is not easy to answer. Duke Leto Atreides. When Romber Vernius approached Jessica on an enclosed balcony in the Grand Palais, the cyborg Earl opened his mouth, but no words came forth. She knew immediately that something terrible had happened.
Tell me, what is it?
It's the boys, Bronzo and Paul. They're gone, he explained in a rush, but as he finished, the confusion passed from his demeanor like mist blown on a wind, and he drew himself taller. I promised Leto to keep your son safe. If an enemy has abducted them or harmed them, Jessica forced herself to rally, to speak in a calm, matter-of-fact voice that helped focus Romber.
There are several possibilities. It seems most likely that someone has taken them. They're lost or injured, or they've run away. How long have they been gone?
The first few hours are the most critical. When his expression flickered, then fell, Jessica realized he had not told her everything.
Now is not a time for secrets, Romber. Our sons are missing.
With deep regret, the cyborg prince described how he had revealed the boy's true parentage, and Bronzo's angry, distraught reaction to the news. Bronzo's voice shook with tension. After the loss of his wife, Jessica didn't know how much more the rebuilt man could bear. Back inside the Grand Palais, in the lower exhibition chamber surrounded by transparent plaz walls, Jessica helped Romber establish an emergency center. Gurney and Duncan came running at her summons, and both vowed to find the boys at all costs. Gurney paced across the checkerboard floor and doubled back.
Call that Avadi in here again. I still think he had something to do with what happened to Tessia, and the boys would be his next likely target. Suspicion is like a foul odor, tainting all and slow to disperse.
Even if they are innocent, the technocrats will rejoice to hear about another problem I have to face, Romber groaned. Another Vernius blunder. Jessica's voice was hard as she called up projected maps of the subterranean city complex.
What if they've left the planet? Could they have fled or been taken to the surface? Gotten aboard a ship?
We have security systems. I have already asked teams to check the imagers, but they saw no record of... His shoulders sagged again. But it would have been child's play for Bronzo to bypass them. He had access to any number of scramblers. He used them as toys. But now... I don't know.
Let's have a look at your spaceport records to find out how many ships have come and gone since the boys went missing.
Dozens, Romber said. Shipping is quite active, with vessels coming and going at all hours. We've had 3 Highliners since yesterday. Jessica cut him off. She would not allow Romber to drown in his doubts, but urged him to pursue every possibility.
Then we will also obtain Spacing Guild records. We'll study the routes of those 3 Highliners and determine which ships the boys could have gotten on, willingly or unwillingly, and plot a matrix of destinations where they might be.
Romber was moving now, ready to gather the information. He looked stronger and more determined, and Jessica was relieved. She had helped him out of his malaise, and now he was ready to charge ahead. You're right, Jessica. If they ran away, Paul or Bronzo must have left some trace. They're just boys after all. Jessica didn't contradict him, though she knew that Paul was not just a boy. Next, she turned to her own difficult task, mentally composing a message to be given to the next guild courier to depart from Ix. She had to tell Duke Leto the bad news.
Prescience cannot be a random thing. It must be by design. The question is, Whose design? Comment. Intergalactic Commission on Spirituality. For several days, as the two boys settled into their new circumstances aboard the guild ship, the Waku steward showed them around the service decks. Exclusive side passages allowed employees to move about without mingling with the passengers. Paul and Bronso wore common work clothes, and Enzin assigned them to jobs that even the Waku found unpleasant. Because the boys had no better option, they worked without complaint. The man showed a remarkable lack of curiosity, not even bothering to ask their full names. Waku seemed to respect secrets and privacy. Paul and Bronso stood with him on a wide landing surrounded by exposed pipes, power conduits, and harsh glow globes. Enzin warned, "Beware of guild officials or highliner inspectors. They are the greatest hazard on this ship. Don't let them notice you. If anyone asks to see your employment documentation, send them to me. We Waku have a certain amount of influence." Paul noted his odd attire. "Your people seem to be everywhere on guild ships. But where's your home world? Where do the Waku come from?" "By Imperial decree, all of our planets were destroyed in the Third Kolsak War, ages ago. Our descendants have no home, and we are forbidden from ever setting foot on a planetary surface." Paul could not imagine the level of vindictiveness that would lead to the obliteration of entire planetary populations. "For what offense?" "When a few militant commanders committed war crimes, my entire race was held accountable for the atrocities." Enzin pushed his dark glasses up, clicked them into his headset, and regarded the boys with his blue eyes. "The Waku backed the wrong side against a powerful emperor, and he sent his armies to annihilate us. But the Spacing Guild granted us sanctuary aboard their ships, where our people have worked for many generations. We are space gypsies and survive as best we can, without riches or a homeworld. So much time has passed that not many people remember. In fact, I could probably slip off a guild ship if I truly wanted to." He clicked his glasses back into place over his eyes. "But why would I want to? The guild pays us well, and we make our homes in their midst." He motioned both boys to step out of the way as they heard approaching voices. Moving briskly, a contingent of officials dressed in gray marched past them and up the metal stairs, speaking in an arcane tongue. The men passed through a hatch and onto the brightly lit main decks, wasting not so much as a glance on the steward or his young companions. When they were gone, Enzin said, "The powerful are often blind to those they believe to be insignificant. We Waku are invisible, unless we do something to call attention to ourselves."